you know, when you start those early days of motherhood and you aren't sure what you're doing and you know whatever it is you're doing, you're not doing very well, I think it's easy to kind of look around you and wonder, what is everyone else doing? How is everyone else handling this and coping with this? And for better or worse, societally, we don't have good answers for new mothers. We joke about needing alcohol to cope. We joke about mommy needs wine. We joke, in a lot of ways, we gaslight new mothers into believing that the problems they are having and the struggles they're having are something that can easily be fixed, or something that you can laugh off or make light of, when in fact they're far more significant and challenging than something a simple glass of wine can solve.
They say when a baby is born, so is a mother. But while you are there to help your baby grow into the person he or she is meant to be, who is there to help you? Many women feel lost and alone when they become mothers, wondering, who am I now? Sometimes it feels like the transformation from woman to mother is as radical as a caterpillar's transformation into a butterfly. Did you know that inside the chrysalis, the caterpillar literally turns into goop before it rearranges itself into a butterfly? This podcast is about the goop, what soul transformation looks like as you transition from being a woman to a mom. Your baby's growth matters, but yours does too. You're not alone. I'm your host, Brittany Ming. Welcome to the Motherhood Metamorphosis.
Welcome everyone to this episode of the Motherhood Metamorphosis. I'm your host, Brittany Ming, and today we're talking to Celeste Yvonne. Celeste is a popular writer and personality whose filter-free approach to parenting and sober living resonates with mothers everywhere. In 2018, Celeste openly spoke about her struggles with alcohol and announced her commitment to becoming a sober mom for the sake of her health and her family. Celeste lives in Reno, Nevada with her husband and two boys. Welcome. I'm so glad to have you here today.
Thanks, Brittany. I'm so happy to be here. It's nice to connect with you.
Yeah. So I reached out to you because I love your page. And yeah. I have just, I don't know, your page is just giving me such good food for thought. And I'm like, I want to have her on here and just talk about, I want to talk about your story. And I want to talk about the culture and just how much insight you bring into mommy wine culture and what it means to kind of cope in the world in new and different ways than what our culture necessarily tells us is normal or expected. So I wanted to know if you could just tell us your story and why this is close to your heart.
Yeah. So, you know, I became a mother a little bit later in my life. I was almost 35 when my first child was born. And I think at that point, a lot of my individuality had been established. I knew what I wanted. I knew what I was good at professionally. I had established myself as a person outside of motherhood, and motherhood was a new hat to wear, for lack of a better way to describe it. But it threw me off because I felt pretty confident and settled in who I was as a person and as a woman and as a professional. And here I was as a mother now, completely clueless, no idea what I was doing, overwhelmed, exasperated, and feeling like I was a complete failure. I also was starting right from the get-go with some early signs of postpartum depression. So I think from the very start, I felt like some of the cards were stacked against me. I thought motherhood would be more intuitive than it was. I was not ready for some of this postpartum depression feelings, and also just feeling like truly I sucked. I really sucked at motherhood, and I was really good at everything else. Like, how did I get here? You know, when you start those early days of motherhood and you aren't sure what you're doing and you know whatever it is you're doing, you're not doing very well, I think it's easy to kind of look around you and wonder, what is everyone else doing? How is everyone else handling this and coping with this. And for better or worse, societally, we don't have good answers for new mothers. We joke about needing alcohol to cope. We joke about mommy needs wine. We joke, in a lot of ways, we gaslight new mothers into believing that the problems they are having and the struggles they're having are something that can easily be fixed, or something that you can laugh off or make light of, when in fact they're far more significant and challenging than something a simple glass of wine can solve. So I kind of felt myself get lassoed into this narrative that maybe this is something that I can self-medicate my pain with and my struggles with. And I did start drinking more than usual as I found myself really just looking for something to settle myself and to look forward to at the end of the day, to just find some semblance of me time in a period of life where there's no such thing. And as I saw my drinking increase, I saw how significantly it was impacting my day-to-day and my quality of life and my parenting and my mental health. The correlation was petrifying, but I wasn't really sure what else to do. I didn't think that quitting alcohol was the right approach because I didn't think I had a drinking problem. Maybe I did. I didn't know if this was the definition of alcoholism or not, but I had always grown up believing that if you weren't an alcoholic, you can and should and will drink. So it felt like a very black and white situation, and I was in a very gray place. It wasn't until, you know, I had a bit of a health scare where I realized this alcohol is doing nothing for me. It's not serving me. It's putting me in a worse position as a parent and as a human than I want to be right now. And I need to see what life would look like without, you know, gripping a glass of wine like my life depended on it, to see if there's a better way to live and a better way to do this. And I did find that in my sobriety. It took time, and it took more than just not buying alcohol. It took actual work and effort and reading and focusing on myself in therapy to get to a place where I could definitively say my life is more satisfying sober. And that was 4 years ago when I quit. But now I try to let other people know that there is a way to live a satisfying sober life in motherhood, in womanhood. And it's not something we hear very often. It's certainly not something we see on social media or on TV very often. I feel like we still are fed this message that there's two kinds of people in this world. There's alcoholics and there's people in recovery. And what we're learning from a science perspective is addiction is very much a spectrum. There is something called gray area drinking, where you are uncomfortable with the amount you're drinking, but you don't necessarily fit on this chemically dependent side of addiction. And that sobriety is something that we can and should encourage to anybody who is curious about what that might look or feel like. There's no downsides. So that's what I try to speak on, and that's the lifestyle I try to live. And it's worked wonders for me, and I hope that my story encourages others to consider it as well.
Yeah. I love your story. And I love the word you used, curious, because I have read a lot about being sober curious, and I copied out a definition from an article that I'll share in the show notes about what sober curious means. And this was a new term for me, and maybe it'll be a new term for some of our listeners. But this author writes, being sober curious means literally to choose to question or get curious about every impulse, invitation, or expectation to drink, versus mindlessly going along with the dominant drinking culture. And I think you do that so well with your page of saying, like, hey, why is it that every mom's brunch we go to, you're expected to down like 4 mimosas? You know, why is it at every birthday party the kids go to, we think that parents have to drink to cope with getting through the day? Why is it that we think we need to reward ourselves with, you know, a glass or 3 of wine at the end of the day because it was so hard? And I think that's what I like about your page, is that you're literally saying, hey, let's get curious about this. And so I know that you've chosen for yourself that sobriety is the path for you. But I think that your page opens up this idea of saying, hey, let's get curious about this and let's ask questions and not just go along just saying that the dominant drinking culture for motherhood is the way that moms need to cope to get through, or make jokes about all the time that really don't serve people in what their real needs are.
Yeah, I like to say, you know, the only people that win in that mommy needs wine narrative is big alcohol. That's the only people profiting off that message, because when we send that message to each other, even if it's meant to be lighthearted, with the best of intentions, what you are invariably saying is their struggle is something alcohol could fix. Or their struggle isn't worrisome or significant enough that they might need help. They might need support. And we have to be careful with that message, because especially when it comes to postpartum depression, oftentimes the mother does need support and help. And it's not a little quick meme or a joke or passing it off can be dangerous, and it's certainly not helpful. Mm-hmm. So I'd love for us to get more curious with what better ways can we support each other as mothers instead of making light of our struggles.
Right. What are we saying to women when we tell them, okay, well, you just, you know, have a glass of wine and it'll take away the stress of your toddler screaming all day long? You know, like, what is it that women really need, as opposed to just needing a way to cope? Like, is coping living? And if what can we do better than saying coping with alcohol in the way that we approach motherhood today? So what are some messages that you think, besides just this area of coping, what are some messages of mommy wine culture that we may not be aware of, especially the messages that we give to our children?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many messages that come into play when we do something as simple as sharing a joke about needing wine to cope. You know, I'm a daughter of an alcoholic, and I often think to myself, you know, I already have a lifetime of trauma that I get to deal with by having a childhood like that. I can only imagine the additional trauma that would have been brought on me and my siblings had my dad made a point of joking that we were the reason he drank. So there's that message and the implications of that. There is the message that women don't need more support and equity and resources than we're being given societally, which we desperately do need. We do not have affordable daycare. We do not have equal rights in the workforce. We do not have flexible spaces in the workforce to be able to do both, be a mother and work professionally. So we are minimizing that call for additional support and help. When a woman does say she needs help, we can minimize the impact of that seeking support by making light of it or making a joke of it, like it's something that a glass of wine could fix. And also by making light of our women's struggles with an addictive substance in and of itself is such a dangerous, I mean, it would be in line with saying, mommy needs Vicodin, mommy needs an addictive substance. I mean, that's essentially what we're saying. And only because alcohol is the only drug that we need to explain not using, we have simplified it and made light of it. But can you imagine telling somebody, it sounds like you need a cigarette, like, or, you know, and saying that in front of their children, I mean, of all things. We know better now than to make light of the dangers of cigarette smoking. And yet alcohol is an extremely dangerous and addictive substance. There's nothing to make light of there. And just because as a society and culture, we have normalized the usage of it, doesn't make it any less dangerous.
Right. We can sometimes get to that point where we're just coping and we may have questions we start asking, like, do I have a drinking problem? Am I an alcoholic? How much is too much? And I know that sometimes those questions can run through our minds or we type them into Google. But what do you think are better questions that women can ask themselves than, do I have a drinking problem or am I alcoholic?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that we should be asking ourselves instead of necessarily, am I an alcoholic? I think for me, the main question was, is alcohol serving me? I think something else you can ask is, do the benefits outweigh the consequences? Do the pros outweigh the cons? People make lists, you know, what am I gaining from this and what am I losing, or what's the negative? I think something else we also need to bring up is, you know, the definition of mommy wine culture. And the way I describe it is a message that we send that says or implies that our kids are the reason we drink, or that we need alcohol to cope with parenting. And sometimes people mix up mommy wine culture with somebody who happens to be a mom drinking a glass of wine. And that is not what I'm trying to say in my message about my concerns with mommy wine culture. I think, you know, a mom who wants to have a glass of wine, go for it. You know, I think that's not my concern here. The concern is when we connect it or tie it to the challenges of motherhood or the challenges of raising our children. That's where I struggle. That's where I really take issue with some of the things we say or speak about when I am talking directly about mommy wine culture and the dangers of it.
Yeah, that's a really good distinction. I'm so glad you brought that up. I think that's really good. And I liked what you said about, is drinking serving me? And I had been anticipating our conversation. I was thinking about my own situation right now. Is I am solo parenting. I'm a military wife and my husband is gone right now. And when my husband's home, like, we enjoy having ciders at dinner, or he has a beer, or sometimes we'll have a glass of wine. And alcohol makes me really tired. But when he's home, I can afford to be a little more tired in the evening. But when he's not home, I can't. And I learned this when he was deployed last time, and people did ply me with alcohol. Like, it is, if it's prevalent in mom culture, it's even more prevalent in military culture, is just to say, oh, you need a bottle of wine. And people, I mean, they bring you dinner, but they also bring you alcohol. And that culture is intense. So I was getting a double dose of that. And I did observe myself that when I drank with dinner, my little bit of patience that I was holding on to dissolved because I got really tired. Yeah. And I yelled at my kids more on the nights that I had one glass of wine with dinner. I couldn't wait for bedtime. I was just snappy and impatient and exhausted. I couldn't, like, do the bath time and the teeth brushing. I was just wanting to lay on the couch because that little bit of reserve I had left in the evenings to make it through bedtime to get them in bed just dissolved with the glass of wine. And I had to realize that about myself. So like for me, I had to say, when my husband's gone, drinking doesn't serve me. That has been my limiter to myself. You know, I can't have a glass of wine with dinner. Even if I'm like, oh, this nice lasagna I made tonight would be so great with a glass of wine while all the kids sit here. And maybe it'll just temper that noise level a little bit more because I've got 5 kids. But I'm like, I have to make it through bedtime. I have to be present with them and not fall apart completely because I know that my limits as a complete lightweight are 1 glass of wine. That's my limit. That's me just asking myself, is alcohol serving me, and making choices to that end. Those questions like, do I have a drinking problem? No, I don't think so. But is alcohol serving me in this moment? Also, no. So I think it's just having that self-awareness and that curiosity to say, hey, what's going on with me? What do I need? Is my impulse to drink? Hell yes. Is it the right thing for me at this moment? No. So that bringing that awareness to each unique situation, I think, is so important for women in this culture, where that knee-jerk reaction is to say, oh my gosh, I just need a glass of wine to get through this afternoon or this evening or this party or this weekend or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I often think about how energy is such a currency in parenthood, and you have to consider what you're willing to spend it on. I mean, it's so valuable. I mean, energy is the most valuable of all the currencies in parenthood. I mean, alcohol consumes energy. It's probably one of the top consumers. So not just when you're drinking, but the next morning. I think for me, waking up with a hangover or a headache or just a little groggy, like that energy impact from a previous night of drinking made the entire difference in how I was going to parent that day, made the entire difference in how involved and present I was going to be able to be with my children that day. And you have to take that into consideration when you're consuming anything, but alcohol, especially as known as a depressant, like it will suck your energy out. So that when you're weighing the pros and cons or trying to determine, you know, what do I want to achieve by this, you have to keep that in mind.
And I think that's such a better litmus test for making choices, because it's not guilt inducing. It's saying like, hey, how do I want to live my life tomorrow? What's my energy level going to look like? How can I give the best to myself and to my kids? And not a shame message that we put in ourselves, like I'm such a bad person, or I don't have any self-control, or things like that. I don't know. Maybe that can be a better way to look at the messaging, because I don't want people to listen to this podcast and think, I don't want to shame them. Like, I want to empower them and to make good choices for themselves and for their kids, and to say, hey, I'm going to live my best life. That may include alcohol and it may not, but like having a new type of conversation with ourselves and maybe even our loved ones can help empower women to make those good choices for themselves.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that I thought of when you were talking is how the deciding whether or not you want to have a drink should not require an explanation by any means anyway. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't serve you, or if you don't see value in it, one thing I think societally we suck at is, well, why not? But instead of saying why not to drinking, I think we should be more geared towards saying why. Like, are you going to gain more from this than it's going to suck out of you from an energy standpoint? So often I feel like when you, especially in social occasions, but anytime when you are offered a drink and you say no, the question is, why not? Why wouldn't you drink? And I'd love to get to the point where that doesn't even come up, where, you know, if somebody were to say, do you want a cigarette? And you say no, you would have to explain why you don't want a cigarette. Like, it should just go without saying. So that's the other part I would love people to take away from this, is you don't need a reason. You don't need an excuse, or you shouldn't need an excuse for choosing to opt out of alcohol on any particular night, just because, you know, you have that gorgeous lasagna in front of you, or just because you're at a party and it seems like everybody else is drinking. We shouldn't have to drink just because 80% of the population does. You know, that's not a good enough reason. Like, let's think about, you know, when we weigh that pro and con list in our head, let's decide for ourselves, is this the choice I want to make for myself tonight? Does this serve me?
Yes. And I love your page in like the stories you share. And I hope you guys visit her Instagram and Facebook, because she's got great videos of like voiceover things with music and just the memes you share. Like, you are engaging in this type of conversation and you're helping people to have new ways of thinking about this, new ways of saying, hey, I can, you know, not drink at a party and I don't owe anybody an explanation. I love that narrative. And I think a lot of times we're so inundated in drinking culture, we don't even, one, realize it, or two, realize there's other options. And so, yeah, it's, you don't owe people an explanation if you choose not to drink. And there are, I'm so glad there are becoming better options out there. I think this needs to increase, like non-alcoholic cocktails, or, you know, different ways of responding to the, no, I'm not drinking right now, or like, no, thanks, like not tonight. And people are a little more accepting of that. I think it definitely needs to increase.
I would love to reach a place where, and this wasn't my idea, the founder of the beverage company Dry Soda, which is, they offer soda and non-alcoholic products. Her idea was, what if we could get to a time and place where, like, you're at a restaurant and the waiter is asking you what you want to drink, and the question becomes, can I get you something alcoholic or non-alcoholic to drink? You know, like, just where it's just a given that it doesn't have to be, when somebody says, can I get you a drink, it's implied it's alcoholic. The option's always there. Like, I would love to get to a space where if you go to somebody's house and they want to offer you a drink, they offer you an alcoholic option and a non-alcoholic option. Like, what an amazing place that could be, where somebody doesn't feel like they are put in kind of an uncomfortable position if they don't want to drink and they don't want to have to explain why. Mm-hmm. That would be a wonderfully inclusive place for us to all get to. Selfishly, I also hope we get there too, so our children someday, when they get to a place if they are at a party and they don't necessarily want to drink, they don't have to feel like an outcast for choosing the non-alcoholic option. I just think it would be a more comfortable position for everybody involved if we could reach a place where we're more inclusive in some of the decisions choices we offer people around their drinking.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I do hope we can get there. And I'm seeing good progress in society, but I think we have a long way to go too. I want to circle back to the idea about coping, because women do... I mean, I include myself in this sometimes. We do turn to alcohol to cope because parenthood is stressful. The pandemic has made it especially stressful, especially for moms. I mean, I remember seeing some statistics like March 2020, or, you know, that first spring, like alcohol statistics or drinking statistics just skyrocketing. And we are still, I mean, we're maybe seeing a little light at the end of the tunnel, but we are dealing with 2 years of intense stress. And it's really hard. I have been watching Cobra Kai with my teen boys. And I don't know if you've seen that show, but one of the main characters in it, he drinks a lot. And my boys, being teens, they're like, he's always drinking beer, blah, blah, blah. Like, he's at work, and like, he's like stumbling around. So like, can we see this character's drinking progression in the show? And then he actually was building a healthier lifestyle for himself and was drinking less. And my boys noticed that. They're like, oh, good, he's drinking a Coke. And I'm like, boys, I want you to observe something. The opposite of drinking isn't not drinking. It's connection. Like, do you see how he's connected? Now he has this great girlfriend in his life and he's connected to her and has somebody to talk to. He's connected to his students in a way that's been meaningful to him. His business is thriving. Like, it's not that he said, oh, I'm just going to stop drinking. You have to fill your life with connection and meaning, either to yourself or in other ways. And I brought that up to them, that we can't just tell somebody, you need to just quit drinking, because quitting sometimes is such a scary void that we don't even know what we're going to do if we stop. So I was wondering if you could talk about some good things that you have found in your life, in your sobriety, that have given you just that light and goodness that maybe the coping with alcohol didn't give you.
Yeah, I mean, when you struggle with drinking, or you're using any substance or activity to cope, it's serving a purpose. So I used to drive me crazy when people say, well, why do you drink? I hate it. Like, or a therapist would ask me that, or anybody. And I hated that question, because I was like, because it's fun. Like, why does anybody drink? Like, that, it drove me crazy. And it wasn't until I started doing more recovery work that I was able to really drill down as to my why. Like, how was alcohol really serving these coping needs of mine in a way that I wasn't finding in other resources? And that is the genuine question you need to get to drill down to when you're ready to make a change, whatever it is, whatever unhealthy coping strategy you found, is what purpose was it serving, and how do I find a better way to fill that need? I have heard that, you know, they say the opposite of addiction is connection. There's a great TED talk on that. And I think one of the things I want to go back to with when the pandemic hit, you know, alcohol skyrocketed. We saw so many people struggle with their mental health. Alcohol went up because it was serving a purpose. I mean, it was filling a void and a need, which was a lot of fear and anxiety and stress and additional pressure and weight that went on us to do things that we weren't prepared for or we were terrified to do. Looking back, you know, I think there are better ways that any of us can handle or manage and cope in a very deeply scary time or just a stressful period of your life. And connection is a great way to do that, which is why meetings and support systems in recovery are so important and such a prominent part of people's recovery journeys. One of the things that came out of the pandemic that has been just a tremendous life changer for so many, myself included, is it turned meetings and connection virtual. And now the idea of attending a meeting or visiting a sober support group or seeing a therapist isn't something you have to even leave your house for. And for mothers, especially, the challenges of having to go try to find a meeting somewhere, let alone find someone to watch your kids, just added so much additional weight and stress to what is already a very scary situation. And to now be able to have that opportunity to connect with other people virtually and safely from your own home has literally changed the recovery space. So I always tell people, I mean, they have support groups for people who are sober curious. They have support groups for people who are trying to reduce their alcohol intake. It does not have to strictly be for someone who identifies as an alcoholic. So I would encourage people to visit that space if they are looking for a connection, or they do believe that their drinking is to help fill that void of connection. And the other thing I do want to emphasize is women especially struggle with anxiety. We're much more likely to be diagnosed with anxiety and depression than men, statistically speaking. And many of us are prescribed medications. Alcohol and almost every antidepressant do not mix. In fact, they're counteractive. So if you are taking a daily anti-anxiety pill or antidepressant and you are drinking habitually, you are having implications with how successful that antidepressant is going to be. I didn't know that for a long time. And I fell in and out of depression for years. I had no idea that my drinking was having a negative or ineffectual impact over these medicines that were trying to get me better. And that's not something that I think we talk about enough, that for our own mental health, alcohol doesn't do any favors. One of my favorite books on this topic, if you are sober curious or just want to learn more about the impacts of alcohol on your brain and your body, is This Naked Mind by Annie Grace. And in it, she talks about, from a chemical standpoint, the positive dopamine rush that you get from alcohol lasts about 20 minutes. And after that point, any sort of sensations or feeling or wanting another drink is 100% stemmed from that first dopamine rush and your body trying to get back to normalcy. And the addictive tendency in our brain to want to recreate that first rush feeling, which is why we have a second drink, which is why we have a third drink. It's all an attempt to get back to that first 20 minutes of chemical high that our body feels. And when I was able to break that down from a kind of a more factual or medical perspective, it just felt more tangible. Like understanding, like all this goes back to is that first drink and this attempt to recreate that with a second or a third, with our body, what the going through a hangover, literally, because it's trying to get back in to this space of homeostasis. For me, that was the understanding I needed to be able to say that was not worth it for me. Those 20 minutes are great, but I don't want the implications of that with the way I handled that. And I certainly never appreciated a hangover. And I just think there's different ways that we can look at it and look at the effects of alcohol where it makes more sense and we can better understand why we're doing what we're doing. And then we can come up with better ways to meet that need in a different way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what it all comes down to when you are using alcohol to cope. What need are you trying to meet? And what are other ways we can do that that won't hurt us and mm-hmm. won't negatively impact us or drain us or, worst case scenario, cause dependency?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you talked about connecting on meetings, connecting online. I think that we can also connect to ourselves and like saying, what does my body need? Like, do I need to stretch? Do I need to meditate? Do I need to cry? You know, do I need to have a bath? I mean, there's a lot of ways we can connect to ourselves and connect to others and say, is this what my body needs right now to feel better in the space, the hard space? I don't want to minimize that to say, like, parenthood is hard and it's been really hard the last few years. I mean, full stop. Anxiety is high, depression is high. Like, I have struggled with it myself. And I think that it's that daily practice of saying, how can I meet my needs in my life as I take care and love these children that are in my life as well and love myself well? So learning to cope in better ways and taking steps, hopefully to go beyond coping to thriving. I think that's the goal. Mm-hmm. I'm really appreciative of our conversation. I really hope that it can just spark some new thoughts in people and to make them feel hopeful about their own lives and get curious about how they want to interact in their worlds.
Yay. Thank you. I feel like we could have just kept going.
I do too. Yeah, we're wrapping up. As we wrap up our time, though, I have these fun rapid fire questions that I like to ask every guest. So are you ready for this?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. All right. First one. Which Disney princess would you like to take out to coffee?
Probably Beauty, because she's a fellow reader. I'm sure we would have tons of books to talk about.
Yes. You are the first person to say her, and that is who I would say because I love to read. So I am super excited that you said that. So yes, fellow Bell lovers here. We want to take her out.
Yes.
That's great.
I love that.
What is one thing you must have on your nightstand?
I'm looking at my nightstand right now. And nothing is on there that I must have at all
points. You're like, it has to be clean.
I would say my chapstick, hand lotion, and I have, right now I've got about 20 children's books, but a couple of my own books would be lovely. Yes.
It'd be nice to replace those with some novels or some good books. Yeah. Chapstick is my go-to. I'm like, I got to have the chapstick. What's your go-to treat after the kids go to bed?
So I go to bed with my kids. So when I have a treat, I have to sneak it during the day so they don't see it. But anything chocolate is a 100% win for me. And I have to keep it hidden in the house because the second they hear a wrapper, they want to know what's up.
Yes. It's like Pavlov's dogs, like the plastic crinkle is like, Mom, I want some. Yeah.
Yeah. Gimme, gimme.
Yeah. What's an ordinary moment that brings you great joy?
That I love that you asked this. I just had a sober meeting about ordinary moments that we appreciate yesterday. So that I love that we're so in tune. Because I wrote a list down. My favorite moments are my first cup of coffee in the morning, when the sun comes over the mountain and it hits your skin, just that feeling of warmth. I love hearing my kids when they're not fighting, interacting. I love listening to my child's breathing when I'm laying next to him. I think, you know, one of the things, I lead sober support meetings each week, and we were just talking yesterday about how the most precious times are in the ordinary, and how they are moments that when we weren't sober, and when we were constantly seeking that next drink, we didn't appreciate, that we wanted to get past, that we did not want to be present for. And those ordinary moments are, they are what we're worth living for.
That's really beautiful. I love that. I love everything you listed. The last show you binged and loved.
Right now I'm watching The Dropout. And okay. I love it. It's not done yet, but I just watched the most recent episode yesterday. And yeah, I can't get enough.
I haven't watched that one, so I'll have to check it out. That sounds good. If you run out of this besides milk, you have to go to the store.
Coffee. If I don't have coffee in the house, I'm anxious. that is such a vital part of my morning routine. A morning isn't complete without coffee.
I feel the same. You gotta, it's like that hot drink, that first sip. Yeah, you gotta have it.
Yeah.
And you're tired. You're really, really tired if you don't have it.
Yeah. I mean, it serves a purpose, doesn't it?
Who makes you laugh?
My kids make me hysteric cry laugh because they say the funniest things. They're witty even when they don't mean to be. And my dogs crack me up too.
Yes. I love it when I hear animals, but it's true. Animals can be just the silliest and the dumbest and like the cutest things ever. It's great.
I know. Oh my God. Gotta love them.
Yeah. When you were 5 years old, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a veterinarian. I specifically wanted to learn how to talk to animals.
Oh, like a Dr. Doolittle, huh?
Yes, exactly. That would be like my dream superpower.
Yeah, that would be great. I hope. Yeah, I think every kid wants that. Or like the special helmet you can put on. You can like just change the channel and talk to the dolphin or the cat or things like that.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yes, it would be awesome. What are you looking forward to?
So I'm going to my first recovery conference next month. It'll be like a girls' weekend. And I am so excited. I have not done anything for myself since before the pandemic. And to be able to have some kid-free time with other women who are sober and in recovery, I have this nervous energy that I am just like, why haven't I done this before? Like, what was I waiting for? I'm really excited.
That sounds really fun. Last one, finish this sentence. Motherhood is...
Motherhood is everything. It's highs and lows. It's exhausting. It is enlightening. It is satisfying. It is unsatisfying. There's no wrong way to approach it. It is truly everything.
I love that answer. And I like how you have encompassed both the good and the bad, because we have to take it all in at once with that relationship aspect. Well, if you'd like to follow Celeste on social media, which I hope you do because her pages are awesome, you can find her on Facebook and Instagram at The Ultimate Mom Challenge. And I will also share her Twitter handle in the show notes. So thank you, Celeste. I'm so glad we got to talk today, and I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you, Brittany. This is great.
Hey friends, thank you so much for listening to this episode today. I hope it encouraged you and gave you some good food for thought. If you're loving this podcast, I love if you could write a review in Apple Podcasts or leave some stars in Spotify. These reviews mean so much to me, and they also help boost the show so new listeners will find the podcast too. I'd also love to have you join us over on our Facebook page. You can find it by searching for the Motherhood Metamorphosis Podcast. Finally, you can dig in deeper into the podcast by becoming a Patreon supporter. For this summer, I'm really excited about the special bonus gift for $5 a month supporters. It's a free Audible download of my book, Unexpected: Learning to Love Your Unpredictable Story. The book is narrated by me, and let me tell you, it was a labor of love, and I may never, ever narrate another audiobook again. But for anyone who has said they like my podcast voice, here you go, a whole book of me podcast voicing. $3 per month patrons will also receive access to a really pretty instant download printable that says, "Be kind to yourself," which I don't know about you, but I need that reminder in my head on the daily. You can find the Patreon account at patreon.com/themotherhoodmetamorphosis. Thank you again for listening and for all your support of this podcast. If you ever have any questions, comments, or if you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email me at brittanyaming@gmail.com.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a screen-filled extravaganza
yes.
for all of us, I'm sure.
Yes. Sometimes I feel like that is a path that makes me insane, but also keeps me, you know, from killing anybody, because
the more
I ban screen time, the more they fight. So I'm like, okay, we just got to keep the peace one way or the other.
I know. I mean, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah, that's how exactly. I feel.